A thin red line across the screen contracts to underline Polygram Video in yellow letters. On a black background, Polygram underlined, Filmed Entertainment. Polygram Filmed Entertainment and Channel 4 Films invite you to a working title production. A Mike Newell film. Hugh Grant. Andy McDowell. A garland of orange blossom frames the title of the film, handwritten in blue on a pink background. Four weddings and a funeral.
They're writing songs of love, but not for me.
Charles, a young man with foppish brown hair, in his early 30s, is asleep in bed. He silences the alarm set at 9 a.m. and goes on sleeping. Elsewhere, a second alarm is silenced by Tom in striped pyjamas, who heaves himself off his bed, strides over to a suitcase, pulling out a black morning coat. He lays it on the bed and, picking up his hairbrushes, ambles through to his bathroom. Fiona, a neat young woman with a short pageboy haircut and wearing an ice blue dressing gown, stands in front of a mirror holding up a black and white outfit and then a black dress with white flowers. With Kristin Scott Thomas, Charlotte Coleman, Simon Callow and James Fleet. Breakfast frying in a pan. Matthew, a slim man of about 30, is putting on his tie as portly, bearded Gareth appears with a pan in one hand and a cigarette in the other. Matthew tenderly wipes shaving foam from Gareth's beard. They smile at each other contentedly. Charles, bare-chested, is still fast asleep, as Fiona, now dressed in black and white polka dots with a wide-brimmed pink straw hat on her head, glides smoothly downstairs.
Good morning, Mrs. Stokes.
Madam.
She's handed a cup of black coffee, which she sips standing up. Behind her, in his morning suit, Tom grabs a last mouthful of breakfast and dashes out after her. In a sunny street, David, a young man, top hat in hand, greets Gareth and Matthew. A Land Rover draws up, driven by Tom, Fiona next to him.
Here I began, so well, but what an end.
The three men pile into the back. With John Hannah, David Bauer, Corin Redgrave and Rowan Atkinson. As the Jeep makes its way along London's embankment under a canopy of leafy trees, Charles is still asleep. The Jeep is on a bend of a motorway. Original music by Richard Rodney Bennett. Charles's eyes stir and blink. He's still lying on his back. He reaches for the alarm clock and holds it up in front of him.
Oh, fuck! Fuck!
He leaps across the bedroom and shakes another sleeping figure by the shoulder.
Fuck!
Scarlett dives out of bed. Charles is adjusting his braces over a clean white shirt. As he bends over, the straps ping off the back of his trousers. Outside.
Fuck! Right, we take yours.
It only goes 40 miles an hour.
Her red Mini speeds down a motorway. Co-executive producer Richard Curtis. Executive producers Tim Bevan, Eric Fellner. Written by Richard Curtis.
What turn off? It's not
the B359. It's the
B359. Fuck it!
Charles puts the car into reverse and starts to back up straight into the path of a yellow truck, which swerves to avoid the red Mini. The little car takes the correct slip road. A black Daimler arrives outside a country church. Almost right behind, the red Mini skids into a parking place 30 metres from the lich gate. The Daimler chauffeur helps out the bride's mother and chief bridesmaid. Charles scrambles into his morning coat. Scarlett, in sunglasses, climbs into an orange dress and puts on a straw cloche hat, and Charles tries to do up her zip.
Fuck. Fuckity fuck.
The beribboned bridal vehicle glides past them.
Fuck it.
The chief bridesmaid, carrying a blue, white and pink bouquet to match her garland, opens the door of the bridal car and the bride in white steps out. Charles and Scarlett scoot past her and into the church. Produced by Duncan Kenworthy, directed by Mike Newell. Angus and Laura, St. John's Church, Stoke Clandon, Somerset, England, May the 1st. Charles, straightening his tie, scampers down the aisle towards Fiona and the other already seated early risers.
There's a sort of greatness to your lateness.
Thanks, it's not a chief without real suffering.
Clipping on a pink buttonhole, he scoots over to the groom.
So sorry, Angus. Inexcusable. I mean, I'll be killing myself after the service if that's any consolation.
Doesn't matter. Tom was standing by.
Thanks, Tom. You're saying. Disastrous haircut.
Tom smiles inanely, and Angus ushers the apologetic Charles into the front pew.
As long as you haven't forgotten the rings.
No.
Charles taps his breast pocket with an assured smile, which fades. Gingerly, his fingers feel into the pocket of his waistcoat. An elegant, dark-haired young woman in a white suit and a broad-brimmed black straw hat hurries through the side door of the church. Holding the brim of her hat and smiling self-consciously, she slips into one of the pews.
Eight people being late.
Charles grins at Angus, who gives him a weak smile in return. One of the ushers gives a thumbs-up sign and motions to two men to open the back door.
Here we go.
Everyone has risen. Charles takes off his specs as the bride, in a long white dress with a white tulle veil over her face and carrying a peach and white bouquet, enters the church on the arm of her father, his top hat and gloves in his clasped hands in front of him. Gareth smiles wickedly as the blonde, pink-faced bride passes him.
Oh, isn't she lovely? Scarlett, you're blind. She looks like a big meringue.
Friends, what a joy it is to welcome you to our church on this wonderful day for Angus and Laura. Now, before we start the service, let us all join together in the first hymn.
Charles has noticed the attractive latecomer, but turns back to concentrate on the rings that aren't in his pocket. On the bride's side, Scarlett sings with gusto. Charles throws a desperate look over his shoulders, mouthing the word help. Unnoticed, he turns back towards the front with a falsely cheerful smile. The mother of the bride, in matching blue suit and hat, is sharing a hymn sheet with Lydia, the chief bridesmaid. Again, Charles turns his head around, mouthing the word help. Matthew notices as Charles holds up his ring finger. Matthew winces as he realizes the problem. He leans across to Gareth, who whispers, "What?" in disbelief, but he isn't wearing any rings. He whispers to Fiona in front of him. Her eyes dart towards Charles as she slips a ring off her finger. Scarlett sings on unaware. Matthew mutters to Tom, who looks at him vacantly.
Scarlett.
Matthew mouths at her. What, she whispers?
Dearly beloved, we are gathered together here in the sight of God and in the face of this congregation
Matthew gives Charles the okay sign. Charles takes a deep breath and leans in to Angus's ear.
Instituted in the time of man's innocency.
Back in a sec.
Therefore, if any man can show any just cause,
Angus jerks his head round nervously. Laura's blue eyes flicker across to him, her mouth set in a pale pink pout. Charles tiptoes along the side of the church towards the back. Matthew creeps across the pews towards him.
And forsaking all others, keep thee only unto her for as long as ye both shall live.
I do.
Matthew hands the rings over to Charles with a this-is-the-best-we-can-do look.
And thereto I pledge thee my troth.
And thereto I pledge thee my troth.
Charles is back by Angus's side.
You have the ring?
He steps purposefully towards the vicar, handing over the rings. The vicar does a double take.
With this ring I thee wed.
With this ring I thee wed.
With my body I thee worship.
With my body I thee worship.
And with all my worldly goods I do thee endow.
On Laura's finger is a multicoloured plastic junk ring. On Angus's, a metallic skull, grinning.
If I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am become a sounding brass or a clanging cymbal.
Good point.
You know I can't smile without you.
A long-haired girl and a man with a centre parting and wire-framed specs with a guitar sit facing the congregation. Gareth drops his head on Matthew's shoulder. He covers his face in mock agony. He jams two fingers in his mouth as if to be sick. The bride and groom, arm in arm, are walking back down the aisle, smiling at their guests. One of them admires Laura's ring. She giggles to Angus. heaves a sigh and smiles sheepishly as they proceed towards the back door. Charles, following in their wake with the rest of the smiling congregation, looks relaxed and relieved. Outside, he watches the guests file past him, among them the woman in the black straw hat.
Great hat.
Thanks. I bought it specially.
She gives him a coy little smile and moves on. The wedding photographer is adjusting Laura's veil. Three children are sitting cross-legged in front of her. One small boy trying to hide under her skirt. She clasps a bouquet, then tugs at her dress.
Get in position, please. Thank you, smile.
Tom and Bernard.
Splendid, I thought. What did you think?
I thought splendid. What did you think?
Splendid, I thought.
Scarlet. Fabulous dress. The ecclesiastical purple and the pagan orange symbolizing the magical symbiosis in marriage between the heathen and Christian traditions.
That's right.
The wedding group poses.
Lovely. And again?
Charles to Fiona.
Any idea who the girl in the black hat is?
Name's Carrie.
Pretty.
American.
Interesting.
Slut.
Really?
Used to work at Vogue, lives in America now. Only goes out with very glamorous people. Quite out of your league.
Well, that's a relief. Thanks.
Angus and Laura climb into the limo amid a scattering of confetti. Gareth.
Right. Reception.
Donning his grey topper as he puts his arm around Charles's shoulder. Tom is trying to wipe something off the sole of his shoe.
Anyone else tread in a cow pad?
No, thought not. See you in a mo.
Do you think I'd hate him as much if he wasn't my brother?
Fiona saunters coolly down the church path.
Don't want to blow my chances for a month by smelling of dung all the way through the reception.
Rubbing his foot against a bale of hay to wipe it off, another bale falls on his head.
Oh, God, I never know what to say in these wretched lineups.
It's a cinch. Just give him a big warm hug and say the bride looks pregnant.
Oh, you could stick with tradition and go for it. You must be very proud.
Heaven preserve us.
Very proud.
Hello.
Tom, with bits of straw on his shoulders, shakes hands vigorously. Charles, sipping champagne, is staring beadily at Carrie, no longer wearing a hat. He stalks towards her, then stops. She's talking to someone else. He pauses to think, then moves off while Tom focuses his camera. Smiling, Charles wanders over to a drinks table. Holding two flutes of champagne, he whips off his specs and strides past Carrie.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
You want one of these?
Oh, thank you.
I'm Charles. Oh, yeah, John, how are you? Yeah. This is,
Carrie.
Delighted, I'm John.
Hi, John.
So, John, how's that gorgeous girlfriend of yours?
She's no longer my girlfriend.
Ah, dear. Still, I wouldn't get too gloomy about it. Rumour has it she never stopped bonking old Toby Delisle, just in case you didn't work out.
She is now my wife.
Excellent. Excellent. Congratulations.
Excuse me.
Any kids or anything, John? Do we hear the patter of tiny feet? No. Well, there's plenty of time for that, isn't there? No hurry.
Charles slopes away, leaving John stunned. In total self-loathing, Charles bangs his head against one of the marquee supports. A wizened old lady stares at him.
Hi, how are you?
He looks away forlornly, watched from a distance by slightly intrigued and amused Carrie. In the marquee where tables are laid for the wedding feast, Fiona is standing with a dark-haired man who's leaning slightly awkwardly on the back of one of the gilded chairs.
Oh, my name's Fiona.
I'm Gerald.
What do you do?
I'm training to be a priest.
Good Lord! Do you do weddings?
No, not yet. I will, though, of course. Jolly nerve-wracking.
Yes. Rather like the first time one has sex.
Well, I suppose so.
They're rather less messy, of course, and far less called for condoms.
Gerald tries to look nonchalant. Charles greets David with a smile. How are you doing? Signs David. Charles signs back to him. Remember the time you started Dad's boat and the propeller cut my leg to shreds? David nods. This is worse. Serena, a girl in a yellow hat and flowery dress, approaches Matthew and points to David.
That boy over there, in the grey.
His name's David.
something of a dish, isn't he?
Yeah, well, I've always thought so.
Why are they,
Oh, the dish can't hear.
Oh. Gosh.
Yeah, silent. But deadly attractive.
A small boy bangs a gong.
Into the marquee, please, ladies and gentlemen. Dinner is served.
Tom and Bernard take their places.
How do you do? Tom, it's splendid to meet you. Very exciting.
George, who read the lesson, pulls out a chair for Carrie. John sits down with a perfunctory smile, barely acknowledging his wife. Scarlett sidles up to a male guest.
Hi.
And kisses him on the lips.
My name's Scarlett. Don't let me drink too much, because I get really flirty.
Charles with an elderly male guest.
How do you do? My name's Charles.
Don't be ridiculous. Charles died 20 years ago.
Must be a different Charles, I think.
Are you telling me I don't know my own brother?
No, no.
Catering staff are serving lunch in the packed marquee. Fiona, smoking, is sitting next to Gareth. Charles rises to his feet and adjusts the microphone. Carrie eyes him with a steady gaze.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry to drag you from your delicious desserts. There are just one or two little things I feel I should say as best man. This is only the second time I've ever been a best man. I hope I did the job all right that time. The couple in question are at least still talking to me. Unfortunately, they're not actually talking to each other. The divorce came through a couple of months ago. But I'm assured it had absolutely nothing to do with me. Apparently, Paula knew that Piers had slept with her younger sister before I mentioned it in the speech. The fact that he slept with her mother came as a surprise, but I think was incidental to the nightmare of recrimination and violence that became their two-day marriage. Anyway, enough of that. My job today is to talk about Angus, and there are no skeletons in his cupboard. Or so I thought. I'll come on to that in a minute. I would just like to say this. I am, as ever, in bewildered awe of anyone who makes this kind of commitment that Angus and Laura have made today. I know I couldn't do it, and I think it's wonderful they can. So anyway, back to Angus and those sheep.
Angus's eyes swivel upwards with forced good humour.
So, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd raise your glasses, the adorable couple.
The adorable couple kiss lovingly. Laura, blushing pinkly, makes her way to the centre of the dance floor, followed by Angus. She starts to dance, flicking her wrists and swaying her arms from side to side in best disco fashion. Angus lurches in front of her, his mouth grim with concentration. He jumps around the dance floor, feet together, as if they were tied. They're joined by their guests. Gareth spinning round whilst bringing his knees up. Bernard gamely doing the twist. David, holding Lydia's hand, grins at Gareth's expansive dancing and brightly coloured waistcoat covered in naked cherubs. Two young girls spin each other round. Tom hurls himself from side to side. As Carrie sways to the music, Charles watches her transfixed. As she runs her fingers through her dark, curly hair, he swigs his champagne. Next to him, Matthew.
I remember the first time I saw Gareth on the dance floor. I feared lives would be lost. She's a pretty girl. The one you can't take your eyes off. Is it love at first sight?
Oh, good Lord, no. It's the bloke she's dancing with. I used to play rugby with him at school. I'm just trying to remember what position he played in. So.
Matthew smiles gently.
But let's say one... For the sake of argument, one did take a fancy to someone at a wedding. I mean, do you think there really are people who can just go up and say, "Hi, babe, my name's Charles, this is your lucky night"?
Well, if there are, they're not English.
Not quite. 3 weeks is about my question popping minimum.
The bride is leaving.
You know, I love you, Dean, don't you? I love you. I love you. And Mike, I've never met you before, but I love you very much, I really do. Good.
Angus watching his bride.
Ignore her, she's drunk. At least I hope she is.
Otherwise, I'm in real trouble.
Lydia slumped over her glass of champagne.
How's it going, Liz?
Bloody awful.
Oh, dear, what's the prop?
I was promised sex. Everybody said it. You'll be a bridesmaid, you'll get sex, you'll be fighting them off. But not so much as a tongue in sight.
Well, I mean, if you fancy anything, I could always...
Oh, don't be ridiculous, Bernard. I'm not that desperate.
No, right. Of course. Fair enough. It's a good point.
The wedding guests wave and applaud as the happy couple dressed for the honeymoon dash out to their waiting car. Laura flings her bouquet. Lydia catches it, grinning ecstatically. Drawn on the back window of the getaway car, the words, 3 months gone, and from under the chassis, a sheep appears. With headlamps blazing, the festooned vehicle slowly moves off down the drive. Fiona, smiling, gives a friendly wave. It's dark as silhouetted wedding guests, including the two folk singers, return to the brightly lit marquee. On the dance floor, someone is walking on his hands. Lydia is draped around a male guest. With his back to her at a nearby table, Bernard sits with his head leaning on his hand, his moustache drooping miserably. Scarlett has her arms around another man. David, with loosened tie, takes a gulp from a beer can and walks past Serena, who watches him with a look of undisguised longing. Tom, in shirt and braces.
Where are you staying tonight, Charles?
Scarlett and I are at some pub, the Lucky Boat, something like that, aren't we all?
Ah, no. Slight change of plan. The others are, in fact, coming back to my place. Nancy's in residence. Might knock us up a quick plate of eggs and bake over a late-night scrabble. Wondered if you'd like to join.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. Thanks very much. Is there room for Scarlett?
Oh, absolutely. 137 rooms, actually.
Tommy, are you the richest man in England?
Oh, no.
No. I believe we're about seventh. Mm-hmm.
The Queen, obviously, and,
Right. That
Branson bloke's doing terribly well. Well, excellent news. I'll go tell Scarlett.
Yeah.
That's, unless you get lucky first.
Tom gives a good-natured double thumbs-up sign as he staggers away, leaving Charles peering through the hole of a near-empty beer can.
Hi.
I thought you'd gone.
No, not yet. I was just wondering where you're staying tonight.
I was staying at some pub called the Boat or something like
that. Boatman.
Right, but now I'm going to stay at some friend's house with, some friends. Well, I say house, I think enormous castle is a more accurate description.
Oh, that's too bad, because I'm at the Boatman.
Oh.
Well, it was nice. Not quite meeting you. It's a great speech.
Thanks.
They stare at each other, he looking awkward, she smiling coyly.
Well, I'm going now.
No, don't go. We can meet now. The evening's just getting going.
Oh, I think we both know that's a big lie.
Charles's melancholy eyes watch her go. He stands as if rooted to the spot.
Fuck.
Gazing after her, dejectedly, he picks up the beer can and takes a mouthful. The folk singers are on stage. Gareth, sleeves of his blue shirt rolled up, his waistcoat open over his substantial belly, takes a swig from a whiskey bottle.
The castle beckons, I think, Tom. Are you sober?
Absolutely. Orange juice all night.
Tom collapses on the floor. Fiona giggles.
Come on.
The friends all get up to leave, followed by a glum-looking Charles. At one of the tables, Lydia and Bernard are locked in a passionate embrace. They both look surprised. She pulls him towards her again and kisses him firmly on the mouth. Headlights come into view at the end of a leafy country lane. The headlights belong to Tom's Land Rover.
Sorry, I think I might stay in that pub after all.
Why on earth?
well.
No. Seriously, I'm doing some research to pubs with the word boat in the title. I hope to produce the definitive work.
Oh, well, please
it's a silly thing.
As the car drives off, Charles wipes his face with his hand, sniffing the cold night air.
Right.
He doesn't move.
Odd decision.
Hands in trouser pockets, he turns and starts to walk up the road in the direction they had come. The heavy wooden door of the timbered pub is open. Charles lets himself in through an inner door and peers over the counter of the small reception desk. He bites his lip uncertainly, sees something, and smooths back his hair as he walks across the lobby.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. In the end, it turned out there wasn't room for all of us, so...
You said it was a castle.
Yes, it is a castle. It's just a very, very small one. Tiny, in fact. Just one up, one down, which is rare.
A drink, sir?
Yeah, I'd like a glass of whiskey, please. Thanks. Do you want...
Yeah, sounds good.
And another one for the lady.
Doubles, sir?
Thanks, yeah.
Carrie dives for cover.
Ah, you're here too. How are you?
Hello. I'm fine.
Haven't seen Carrie, have you?
Who?
Carrie. American girl, lovely legs. Wedding guest. Nice smell.
No, sorry.
Damn. Blast. I think I was in there.
She mouths no way from behind a sofa.
Look, if you do see her, could you tell her I've gone up to my room?
Yeah.
Your whiskey, sir?
Thank you.
And one for the...
Road. Lovely.
Actually, I think I might have one of those. Do you mind if I join you?
No, it'd be lovely.
Another glass of whiskey and a cigar. Hold on. Make that a bottle of whiskey. We might as well settle in, eh? Let's see if we can push on through till dawn, shall we? Lovely wedding.
Yes.
I was at school with his brother, Bufty, tremendous bloke. He was head of my house. Buggered me senseless. Still, taught me a thing or two about life. Where are you known from?
University.
Oh, splendid. Yeah. I didn't go myself. I couldn't see the point, you see. I mean, when you're working the money markets, what use are the novels of Wordsworth going to be, eh?
Excuse me, sir. Your wife says, could you come upstairs at once? Room 12, in case you're so drunk you can't remember.
My wife?
Yes, sir.
Oh, my wife! My wife!
Oh, God, you are drunk. You can't even remember you've got a wife.
Yes. Yeah, do you mind if I...
No. Off you go. Best of luck.
Thanks, yeah.
Lucky bachelor me. I think I'll have another search for that Katie creature.
A Carrie.
That's the one. Damn fine filly. I think I'm in there.
Charles skulks along the upstairs corridor of the pub and stops in front of one of the doors.
Hi.
Hello. Sorry about that.
No, that's fine. He was hard to get rid of.
Yeah.
Her eyes narrow playfully, her lips smiling.
Maybe we could just skulk around here for a bit and then go back down.
Now, that's a thought. I don't usually skulk a lot, but I suppose I could skulk if skulking were required. Do you skulk regularly?
No. No, I don't normally think of myself as a skulker, but...
Well, why don't you come in and skulk for a while, and we'll see.
He nods keenly and follows her into her room.
So I noticed the bride and groom didn't kiss in the church, which is kind of strange. Where I come from, kissing's very big.
Is it? Yes. Well, I think you're right. I think we are probably more reserved, you know. And you may now kiss the bride isn't actually in the Book of Common Prayer.
I always worry I'll go too far, you know, in the heat of the moment.
Uh-huh. How far do you think too far would be, then?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe...
A peck on his cheek.
That would be all right.
Yes, I think that would be fine.
In fact, it might be a bit dismissive. Maybe this.
On the lips.
Might be better.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be dangerous to take it any further.
They take it a bit further and kiss.
That might be taking it a little far. Mm.
They giggle, but don't stop.
Well, what about this? Do you think the vicar would think things had slipped just a little bit out of his control?
I think he might. This kind of thing was really meant to the honeymoon, to the service itself.
Why do you think it's called honeymoon?
I don't know. I suppose it's honey because it's sweet as honey, and moon because it was the first time a husband got to see his wife's bottom.
The next morning, outside, crows swoop up from a spring field. The inn is nestled in a copse of trees, blue in the morning light. Carrie's fingers carefully zip up her overnight bag. Charles is asleep with his back to her under a flowery bedspread. He turns over onto his back in his sleep. His eyes flicker open, and he looks up at Carrie, already dressed.
What's happening?
I have to go.
Where?
America.
That is a tragedy.
Just before I go, when were you thinking of announcing the engagement?
Sorry, whose engagement?
Ours. I assume since we slept together and everything, we'd be getting married. What did you think?
What? That takes a lot of thinking about, that kind of thing. You're joking. For a moment there, I thought I was in Fatal Attraction. I thought you were getting close and I was going to get home and find my pet rabbit on the stair.
Oh, no. But I think we've both missed a great opportunity here.
With a smile, she reaches for her bag.
Bye.
Charles, leaning on his arm in bed, watches her go. His forehead creased into a frown as he lays his head down on his pillow. At 9:10, an invitation to the wedding of Bernard and Lydia at St. Mary of the Fields, Cripplegate, London EC2, 3 months later.
Oh, fuck!
Charles, in shirt and shorts, totters across the bedroom and shakes Scarlett by the shoulders.
Fuck!
They dash out into the street, Scarlett holding the hem of her pink dress over a petticoat of tulle.
Taxi, we can never park.
They run towards a busy corner. Charles desperately scans the street.
Car seems a good idea.
They run to her car. It's been clamped.
Fuck.
They sprint away, overtaking two beefy joggers on the pavement. A train drops to the ground.
No one will notice.
They leap up the steps of the church. Scarlett stops in her tracks and turns round to see the bridal car behind her. She dashes back down the steps to take her place among the other pale pink bridesmaids. She grins brightly. Charles hurries on into the church past David and Matthew. He backtracks and sits down next to them on the end of the pew. Oh.
Sorry, I'm in traffic. Yeah. So who is it today?
From the sacristy, two verges in gold and white mitres and surplices are followed by Father Gerald in full priestly regalia. With his black Beretta hat on his head, he moves down through the church consulting his prayer book. He closes his eyes and mutters to himself. From the front pew, Tom looks round at Charles, holding up two gold rings, giving a thumbs-up sign. Charles laughs at the reference. On the steps of the church, as Lydia fiddles with her dress and kisses her father, Scarlett slips on a red curly wig, and as the bridal group prepares to go into church, she scampers into position next to the willowy other adult bridesmaid. The wig slips off, but is back in place just at the door of the church. With floral arrangements on either side, the bride and her father move down the wide aisle, followed by two little bridesmaids and two page boys, Scarlett's blue knickers clearly visible through the hole in her dress where a big pale pink bow should be. The bride and her father are moving closer to Father Gerald. Bernard steps forward eagerly, Lydia gliding towards him. Gerald, still looking at his prayer book, realizes he's still wearing his Beretta, whips it off, putting it on the floor behind him. Bernard looks worried, but smiles as Lydia, under her veil, stands by his side. Gerald licks his lips and closes his eyes.
In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, Amen. Let us pray. Father, you have made the bond of marriage a holy mystery, a symbol of Christ's love for his church. Hear our prayers for Bernard and Lydia. Through your Son, Jesus Christ, our Lord, who lives and reigns with you and the Holy Ghost, one God, forever and ever. Amen.
It's his first time. He's a friend of the family.
Bernard and Lydia, I shall now ask if you freely undertake the obligations of marriage. Bernard, repeat after me. I do solemnly declare.
I do solemnly declare.
That I know not of any lawful impediment.
That I know not of any lawful impediment.
Why I, Lydia.
Why I, Bernard.
Sorry. Why I, Bernard Godfrey St. John Delaney.
Why I, Bernard Geoffrey St. John Delaney.
May not be joined in matrimony to Lydia John Hibbert.
May not be joined in matrimony to Lydia Jane Hibbert.
Lydia, repeat after me. I do solemnly declare.
I do solemnly declare.
That I know not of any lawful impediment.
That I know not of any lawful impediment.
Why I, Lydia Jane Hibbert.
Why I, Lydia Jane Hibbert.
May not be joined in matrimony.
May not be joined in matrimony.
To Bernard Geoffrey Delaney.
To Bernard.
Scarlett giggles into her bouquet, Charles into his hand. Bernard's father looks daggers. Bernard and Lydia take hands.
I call upon those persons here present to witness.
I call upon those persons here present to witness.
That I, Bernard...
Gerald looks blankly at Bernard, whose lips quiver encouragingly.
Delaney.
Bernard sighs with relief.
That I, Bernard Delaney...
Do take thee, Lydia Jane Hibbert.
Do take thee, Lydia Jane Hibbert.
To be my awful wedded wife.
To be my lawful wedded wife.
That's right. That's right. May Almighty God bless you all. The Father, the Son, and the Holy Spigot. Spirit.
Amen. Bravo!
As the congregation bursts into applause, prompted by Gareth, the two fathers-in-law exchange a less than delighted look. Bernard sighs happily. Lydia beams at him lovingly and they kiss on the cheek, and even Gerald gives a faint smile of exhausted relief.
Thanks.
On the steps of the church, a large group is posing for a photograph.
Sorry.
Tom runs into the picture at the wrong moment.
That way, yes, of course. Sorry, could you two... Sorry.
Tom has run across every single one of the photos. At the reception, Lydia embraces an elderly man. then kisses a woman in an elegant white hat and knee-length suit. Charles is talking to Matthew as Gareth saunters up.
I've got a new theory about marriage. Two people are in love, they live together, and then suddenly, one day, they run out of conversation. Totally. I mean, they can't think of a single thing to say to each other. That's it. Panic. Then suddenly, it occurs to the chap that there is a way out of the deadlock.
Which is?
He'll ask her to marry him.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Suddenly they've got something to talk about for the rest of their lives.
Basically, you're saying marriage is just a way of getting out of an embarrassing pause in conversation.
The definitive icebreaker. Tom, how's the speech coming along?
It's pretty good, I think. Something for everyone. Tears, laughter.
And off he goes to the amusement of his friends.
Well, I think it's a very good theory, Gareth.
Well, there is another argument, of course, that it does have something to do with true love.
Well, there's a thought.
Charles wanders down some steps onto a paved patio and over to a drinks table.
Can I help you, sir?
Can I have three glasses of brandy, please?
Sir.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
Fine. Fine. Yeah, sorry. I'm overwhelmed to see you. Don't go back to America, please. I'll be back in 2 seconds.
Okay.
Charles hurries past Fiona in her pink hat.
Hi, Fee.
With the drinks.
That's yours. That's yours. See you in 5 hours.
Something happened.
Yeah, it has a bit. This is a bloody great wedding, you know.
Grinning eagerly, he dashes back down the steps towards Carrie.
Hi. Well, you look perfect. In fact, you probably are perfect. Well, how are you?
I'm really well. Charles, I'd like you to meet Hamish, my fiancé.
Charles blinks rapidly as a tall man comes towards them.
Excellent. Excellent. How do you do, Hamish? Delighted to meet you. Charming surprise to find Carrie back in the country.
Yes, well, took a lot of persuading, I can tell you. Come on, darling, I told James I was going to get you. You begin to think I've totally lost control of you already.
I'll see you later.
Hamish leads Carrie up the steps by the hand, leaving Charles in a daze. Later, he's sitting alone in a corner.
How are you doing, Charles?
Not great, actually, suddenly.
Ooh. I don't know. I mean, what the hell's going on here? Why am I always at weddings and never actually getting married? No.
It's probably because you're a bit scruffy. Or it could also be because you haven't met the right girl.
Oh, but you see, is that it? Maybe I haven't met the right girls. Maybe I meet the right girls all the time. Maybe it's me.
Oh, nonsense.
My lords, ladies and gentlemen, dinner is served.
Come on. Odds on, you meet your wife at dinner.
Yes.
He presses his lips together in a determined way and leaps to his feet. Matthew studies the table plan and looks around the room. Charles looks at the plan.
Oh, my God.
As two brightly dressed female guests wander past him, he looks aghast.
Charles?
He weaves his way hesitantly between the tables, putting on a brave face.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. I'm Alistair.
Great.
And I believe you know Veronica.
Yeah, hi, V. Hi. Thank you.
A woman in blue next to him eyes him coldly.
Great.
His smile fades. At another table, Fiona sits perfectly still, ignoring all around her.
Tell me, are you married?
No.
Are you a lesbian?
Good Lord. What made you say that?
Well, it's one of the possibilities for unmarried girls. It is a bit more interesting than saying, oh dear, just never found the right chap, eh?
Quite right. Why be dull?
Thank you.
The older woman gives a knowing smile under her hat. Fiona glances at her.
The truth is, I have met the right person. I mean, he's not in love with me, and until I stop loving him, no one else stands a chance.
Oh, bad luck.
Yes, isn't it? I was a lesbian once at school, but only for about 15 minutes. I don't think it counts.
At the top table, Gerald is between the groom's mother and Tom. Carrie is with Matthew and Gareth. Charles is watching her.
There are 400 different kinds of tea. And that's not including all these so-called fruit teas. I took Veronica out to India at Christmas to look at the plantations.
Oh, excellent. Yeah.
believe you and her went out there once.
That's right.
Charles was vile. Mm-hmm. He insisted on cracking jokes all the time I was ill.
I was just trying to cheer you up, Vee.
Oh, you're that Veronica. Which Veronica? Charlie?
Remember Bombay?
Charles and I were going out, he told me he'd had this interesting journey round India with vomiting Veronica. I think that was it.
I don't remember ever mentioning it. Maybe I did.
Oh, come on, Charles. I don't think I've ever been out with anyone less discreet.
Well, I don't think that's probably a bit of an exaggeration, isn't it, Martha?
It is not. I remember you going on about this girl, Helena, was it? Whose mother made a pass at you.
I remember this. You couldn't work it out whether it would be impolite not to accept her advances.
That's right. Mrs. Piggy, Helena was Miss Piggy, so her mother was Mrs. Piggy.
The woman in blue swallows.
I think perhaps it was a...
We've both lost a lot of weight since then.
Everyone exchanges a look as the woman bites into a chocolate.
Ah, great. Speeches.
My lord, ladies and gentlemen, pray silence for the best man.
When Bernard told me he was getting engaged to Lydia, I congratulated him because all his other girlfriends had been such complete dogs.
Lydia.
Although, may I say how delighted we are to have so many of them here this evening. I'm particularly delighted to see Camilla, who many of you will probably remember as the first person Bernard asked to marry him. If I remember rightly, she told him to sod off. And lucky for Lydia that she did.
Unlike Gareth, Lydia's father isn't enjoying the speech.
It's very disappointing.
He storms off, followed by a hangdog Tom. The rest of the friends are slumped on a sofa.
We had the most adorable girl at our table, called Carrie. Apparently her fiancé is awfully grand and he owns half of Scotland.
How are you? Well, I seem to be stuck in the wedding from hell. Ghosts of girlfriends past and have returned. Next thing you know, I'll bump into Henrietta and the horror will be complete.
Hello, Charles.
Hello, Hen. How are you?
The dark-haired girl dissolves into tears.
Oh, Hen, I...
Why can't you just leave her alone? Haven't you hurt her enough?
Mrs. Piggy leads Henrietta away.
Excuse me, I think I'd better be where other people are not.
Across the room, Serena, in a blue and pink flowery dress, makes a beeline for David and taps him on the shoulder.
Hello.
As he turns, she waves hello. She signs, I'm Serena. He waves hello. She brings out a notepad explaining, I'm just learning. I'm probably necking tolls of nestakes. David watches her fingers and replies, no, perfect. He makes the perfect A-OK sign and asks her, would you like to dance?
Oh, yes.
That would be mice. David giggles and motions to the door, taking her by the arm. Charles, with a grim look on his face, wanders along the corridor, but turns on his heel when he sees three girls coming towards him and escapes through a doorway. It's dark in the room. Hanging on a cupboard door, a man's sandy-coloured suit and coral shirt. Charles looks down through the window at a liveried doorman hailing a cab. Arm in arm, Carrie and Hamish move towards the open cab door. Her laughing face looks up in Charles's direction. He watches her climb into the cab and turns away, puffing out his cheeks. David and Serena are dancing, smiling into each other's faces as they circle smoothly round and round. In the darkness, Charles sees the door opening. It's Bernard and Lydia.
Oh,
Charles tries to creep out past them.
Wait a minute. This is no fun. I don't want to see my lovely husband.
Charles stops in his tracks as the lights come on, but they don't notice him. He's glued to the spot, not knowing which way to go. He sidesteps gingerly towards a door. And goes through it.
Mad bridegroom indeed!
Tom is dancing with a tall bridesmaid, moving her round with little sense of rhythm. Under one table, Scarlett and one of the little bridesmaids are doing hand movements in time with the music.
Have you got a boyfriend?
Yes.
What's his name?
Toff. He's good at table tennis. What about you?
Nah, afraid not.
Why not?
I don't know. Because most of the blokes I fancy think I'm stupid and pointless. And so they just bunk me and then leave me. And the kind of blokes that do fancy me, I think, are drips. I can't be bothered to bunk them. Which does sort of leave me a bit nowhere.
What's bunking?
Well, it's kind of like table tennis. Only with slightly smaller balls.
Lydia, in her wedding dress, is sitting astride her husband. The door opens slowly of its own accord. Behind it, Charles is crouching on the top of a wash basin in a small recess. He reaches for the handle to shut it. He's sitting with knees up in front of him. He's lying on his hip, cheek against the wall. He winces with every thud. Charles swallows uncomfortably.
Oh, you thought we'd better be getting back.
Oh, we could just wait a few minutes and have another go.
Naughty little rabbit.
Charles hops down from the basin, smiling genially. The couple look aghast. He produces a pencil.
Found it.
Outside the room, Henrietta.
Charles, we must talk.
Right.
Thing is, Charlie,
I've spoken to lots of people about you.
Oh, God.
And everybody agrees. You're in real trouble, Charles.
Am I?
The thing is, you see, you're sort of turning into a kind of serial monogamist, one girlfriend after another, yet you'll never really love anyone because you never let them near you.
On the contrary, Anne, I...
You're affectionate to them and sweet to them.
Right.
You were even sweet to me, although you thought I was an idiot.
I did not.
You did. I thought you too was a type of submarine.
Well, in a way, you were right. Their music has a very naval
Be
quality.
Be serious, Charles. You must give people a chance. You don't have to think I must get married. But you mustn't start every relationship thinking I mustn't get married.
You know me, most of the time I don't think at all. I just, you know, potter along.
Oh, Charlie. Oh, God, the way he used to look at me. I just misread it, that's all. All the time I thought you were going to propose, and all the time you were just working out how to leave.
No, I wasn't.
Oh, God, this is ridiculous. No.
Hen.
Having a good night?
Yes. It's right up there with my father's funeral for sheer entertainment value. Thought you'd gone.
No, Hamish has to take the Edinburgh sleeper. I'm off now. Keep me company.
A black taxi drives down a neon-lit street. Carrie, looking out of one window, glances towards Charles. He's staring out of the other window.
Here, please. You want to come up for a nightcap?
You sure?
Well, yes. I think we can risk it. I'm pretty sure I can resist you. You're not that cute.
Sorry. Yeah, great.
A cloudy morning skyline of tall, dark buildings above Blackfriars' red-painted bridge. In a room, clothes are strewn over the back of a chair, and more across an armchair. Beyond a vase of blue and white flowers, a bed. and Charles and Carrie lying in it. With her middle fingers, she strokes his chest, her eyes full of warmth, as they gaze at each other. Charles looks away. Now dressed once more, he watches her sleeping. As he straightens his jacket collar, her eyes open. He gives her a fleeting smile, but her expression is melancholy as she bites on the tip of her thumb. He goes on gazing at her, and she closes her eyes. With his tie in his hand, he slopes out. 1 month later.
Morning, Charles. Breakfast's up.
Mmm.
Well, it's a bit burnt.
Excellent.
What are you up to today?
I'm taking advantage of the fact that for the first time in my entire life, it's Saturday and I don't have a wedding to go to. All I have to do is not be late for David.
I was going to go for a job. There's this new shop called Spank that wants a sales assistant. I think I'd be great. They sell all this funny rubber stuff.
Oh, no. Another wedding invitation. And a list. Lovely.
They say rubber's mainly for perverts. I don't know why. I think it's very practical, actually. I mean, you spill anything on it and it just comes off. I suppose that could be why the perverts like it. You're right.
Yeah. It's that girl, Carrie, remember the American?
Wearing Bermudas, a long shirt, shoes and socks, Charles wanders into an ethnic gift shop and approaches a woman at a desk.
Excuse me. Sorry to interrupt. Do you have the wedding list for Banks?
Certainly, sir. Lots of beautiful things for around about the £1,000 mark.
Uh-huh. What about things around the sort of £50 mark, is it much?
Well, you could get that pygmy warrior over there.
This? Excellent.
If you could find someone to chip in the other 3,950. Or our carrier bags are £1.50 each. Why don't you just get 33 of them?
Well, I think I'll probably leave it. Thanks very much. You've been very,
What'd you get?
Well, I never. Nothing yet. I'm just, you know, deciding.
It's nice to see you.
It's nice to see you.
This present thing is great. I should have gotten married years ago. Did anybody go for the pygmy?
The young man was thinking about it.
Oh.
Yeah.
No. Just get me an ashtray. Are you free for about a half hour?
Yeah. I'm supposed to meet my brother, but I can be a bit late.
Oh, good. Come with me. You have an important decision to make. Now, the crucial thing is that you mustn't laugh.
Okay, right.
They're writing songs of love.
Carrie swishes out in a wedding dress.
What do you think?
Divine.
Bit of a meringue. Oh, don't worry. We've only just begun.
This time, a bare midriff and furry bra.
What do you think?
You're kidding.
But it would be wonderful, wouldn't it? Maybe next time.
A little Bo Peep dress and bonnet.
What do you think? I knew it.
But look, if you could find a little staff, it'd be great for looking after sheep.
Don't be rude.
A slinky dress.
It's a bit sexy, this.
Well, if I were your husband, I would die of pride. You may be right. It is dangerous. You know, there's nothing more off-putting at a wedding than a priest with an enormous erection.
In a cafe, they're sitting over two cups of coffee.
One strange thing is thinking you'll never sleep with anyone else. You don't think you'll be unfaithful?
No, not once I'm married. I told Hamish I'll kill him if he does, so I guess I better stick to that.
Quite right, yes.
Anyway, I reckon I've had my fair run at it.
It is a fair run these days, down your way.
Oh, I don't know. More than one?
Well, come on. Tell me. I've seen the dress, we have no secrets now.
Well, the first one, of course, not easily forgotten. It's kind of nice. Two, Harry back. Three, four, five, six was on my birthday in my parents' room.
Which birthday?
17th.
Oh, but we've only reached 17.
Well, you know, I grew up in the country, lots of rolling around in haystacks. Okay, seven. Eight, unfortunately. It's quite a shock. Nine, against a fence. Very uncomfortable. Don't try it.
I won't.
10. Oh, it was gorgeous. Just heaven. Just, oh, he was wonderful.
I hate him.
Charles grins at her adoringly.
12 through 17, the university years. Sensitive, caring, intelligent boy. Sexually speaking, a real low patch. 18, broke my heart. Years of yearning.
I'm sorry.
20, oh my God, I can't believe I've reached 20. 21, elephant tongue. 22, kept falling asleep. That was my first year in England.
I do apologize.
23 and 24 together. That was something.
Seriously?
27. Oh, now that was a mistake.
Suddenly, at 27, you make a mistake?
Yes, he kept screaming. It was very off-putting. I nearly gave up on the whole thing. But Spencer changed my mind. That's 28.
Mm-hmm.
His father, 29.
Father?
30. Oh. 31. Oh, my God. 32. It's lovely. And then my fiancé, that's 33.
Wow. So I came after your fiancé?
No, you were 32.
Oh.
So there you go. Less than Madonna, more than Princess Di, I hope. And how about you? How many have you slept with?
Christ, nothing like that many. I don't know what the fuck I've been doing with my time, actually. Work, probably, yeah, that's work. I have been working late, a lot.
His head bowed, he runs his hands through his hair. Carrie fixes him in an even gaze.
I wish I'd rung you. But then you never rang me. You ruthlessly slept with me twice and never rang me. Oh, bollocks! Help me, please.
David is waiting in a forecourt in front of a glass door and a white staircase as Charles and Carrie run up to him. You're no longer my brother, you're just some git I once met, signs David. I'm sorry, signs Charles.
Carrie, this is David, my brother.
This is Carrie, he signs. David smilingly holds out his hand.
Hi.
We were buying her a wedding dress, says Charles. Pathetic excuse, replies David. Who's she married? Some total penis. What is it about penises that they get such great wives, he asks. Carrie smiles, but doesn't understand.
I was just telling him about you marrying Hamish, and he said it couldn't have happened to a nicer fellow, so that's nice.
Didn't you do it with her once, asks David.
Where are you doing it?
Scotland.
Yes, replies Charles. Beautiful breasts, responds his brother.
He says that's a beautiful place.
Uh-huh.
Hilly.
You should come to the wedding, too. I want as many friends as possible to make up for the gruesome stiffs that Hamish knows. Well, you better go in. Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Charles and David watch her run off. Charles visibly winces. Come on, we're late, he signs. And the two of them go through the glass door.
Fuck it.
And Charles comes herring out through the door again, running up the white staircase. David wanders out behind him. Charles sprints along the South Bank promenade and catches up with Carrie.
Look. Sorry. This is a really stupid question, and particularly in view of our recent shopping excursion. But, I just wondered if by any chance, obviously not, because I am just some kid who's only slept with nine people, but I just wondered, I really feel, in short, to recap in a slightly clearer version, in the words of David Cassidy, in fact, while he was still with the Partridge family, I think I love you. And I just wondered whether by any chance you wouldn't like to, No, of course not. I'm an idiot.
He's not.
Excellent, excellent. Fantastic, I'm so sorry. Lovely to see you. Sorry to disturb. Better get on.
Look. That was very romantic.
Well, I thought it over a lot, you know, I wanted to get it just right. Important to have said it, I think.
Said what exactly?
Said, you know, what I just said about David Cassidy.
Carrie's eyes smile at him warmly.
You're lovely.
She kisses him lightly on the cheek. His eyes blink nervously. She meets his gaze, smiles, turns, and starts to walk off down the promenade. Casting a look over her shoulder before going on, Charles is rooted to the spot. A solitary figure in Bermuda shorts, long shirt and shoes and socks. On a tartan rug, next to a spray of purple and red flowers, an invitation to the wedding of Hamish and Carrie at the chapel of Glenthrist Castle, Perthshire, Scotland, 1 month later. Misty blue hills above a shimmering lake with tall, dark trees reflected in the smooth water on the one edge and the purple moorland on the other. A car with headlights on speeds along a drive under ancient leafy trees and bright green grassland. It pulls up outside a small square chapel, its windows glowing orange in the early evening light. Charles jumps out of the car, whips off the jumper he's wearing, and puts on his wedding coat.
Into this holy estate, these two persons now desire to enter. Wherefore, if anyone can show any just cause why they may not lawfully be joined together in marriage, let him now declare it.
Charles enters the back of the church.
Sorry. Please rise.
He carefully closes the door.
Do you, Hamish, take this woman, Caroline, to be your wedded wife? And do you, in the presence of God and before this congregation, promise and covenant to be to her a loving and faithful husband until God shall separate you by death?
I do.
Do you, Caroline, take this man Hamish to be your wedded husband? And do you, in the presence of God and before this congregation, promise and covenant to be to him a loving and faithful wife until God shall separate you by death?
I do.
Fuck a doodle do.
Charles's head leans forlornly against a pillar. A piper leads Carrie and Hamish down the church path past a blazing torch. Behind them, male guests in kilts, bridesmaids in taffeta evening dresses, older ladies in smart evening wear. Scarlett, in a flouncy skirt, is with Tom and David, both in black tie. The procession moves briskly towards a grey stone house, at the lineup.
Oh, well, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Charles, also in black tie, moves along the line towards Hamish and Carrie.
You look beautiful. Not a meringue in sight.
Carrie smiles graciously, and Charles moves towards a hall packed with Scottish dancers.
Blimey.
Gareth in full Scottish regalia.
It's Brigadoon! Bloody Brigadoon!
In the spacious hall, girls in tartan costume are dancing around each other.
Dear old things, as you know, I've always been proud that there's not a wedding ring between the lot of us. Passing of the years, it's suddenly beginning to distress me. I'd like to go to the wedding of someone I really loved for a change.
Well, don't blame me. I've asked practically everyone I know.
You haven't asked me.
Haven't I? Oh, Scarlett. Would you like to?
No, thank you. It was very nice of you to ask.
Well, any time.
Quite right, Tom. Quite right. That's the spirit. Now, tonight, these are your orders. Go forth and conjugate. Find husbands and wives.
Excellent plan. What do you think, Fifi? Spot a potential hubby in the throng?
Bugger off, Tom.
Quite right.
A toast! Before we go into battle. True love. In whatever shape or form it may come, we all in our dotage be proud to say, I was adored once, too.
True love.
True love.
Tom notices a woman in red standing alone.
Apparently, an enormous number of people actually bump into their future spouses at weddings, which is interesting.
Yes, I met my husband at a wedding.
Oh.
He peers helplessly into his champagne. Charles notices their unsuccessful exchange and moves on past the dancing guests.
Good Lord, I seem to have finished my drink. If you'll excuse me.
As he hurries off, the woman smirks slightly. Scarlett, swaying her shoulders to the rhythm, sidles up to a tall, clean-cut man.
Hello. My name's Scarlett. Named after Scarlett O'Hara, but much less trouble. What's your name?
My name's Rhett.
No. Not really.
No, not really. In fact, it's Chester.
You kid up. I always imagine Americans are going to be dull as shit. I mean, of course you're not, are you? Steve Martin's American, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
You're lovely.
As the two smiling bridesmaids in their pink dresses are led into the hall by their blonde male escorts, Charles watches them glumly. From behind a doorway.
Hello, Charles.
Oh, Anne. Hi. Look, I'm sorry, I couldn't really bear a scene today. I know, you know, we've probably got tons to talk about and all that kind of stuff.
Did I behave that atrociously last time?
Well, you remember the shower scene in Psycho?
Yeah.
Scarier. Oh, God, I'm depressed, Ten. How are you?
Well, I'm cheerful, actually. I weigh almost nothing. Oh, no, I've got a divine new boyfriend.
A young man with curly hair raises his glass to her.
Perhaps you were right, Hen. Perhaps we should have got married.
Oh, God, no. Marry you and I've had to marry your friends. And I'm not quite sure I could take Fiona.
Fiona loves you.
Fiona calls me Duckface.
Well, I never heard that.
Look, darling, come to lunch soon. Give me a ring, OK? Oh, still cute.
Charles smiles wryly to himself as Fiona, in a black sleeveless gown, appears behind him.
How's Duckface?
Good form, actually. Not too mad.
Ladies and gentlemen, the bride and groom.
The assembled guests turn to welcome the happy couple, led in by the piper. The woman in red appears with her husband, a vicar. Fiona and Charles watch from the sidelines as Hamish takes Carrie by the hand and they start to dance. Fiona, standing behind Charles, nuzzles her chin on his left shoulder and puts a sympathetic hand on his right one. With the corners of his mouth turned down, he gazes at the smiling Carrie being twirled around by her new husband.
You like this girl, don't you?
Yes. Yes, it's, what a strange thing when at last it happens. And, she's marrying someone else.
Carrie and Hamish are dancing closely and their eyes are locked together. Fiona retreats to light a cigarette. He turns towards her.
How about you, Fifi? You identified a future partner for life yet?
No need, Ray. Deed is done. I've been in love with the same bloke for ages.
Have you? Who's that?
You, Charlie.
She gives him a resigned smile. His lips part in surprise as he looks her squarely in the face. Her eyes return his gaze for a moment, then she walks away. He follows her into a room furnished in sumptuous green and red. She's smoking with one arm wrapped around her waist, her shoulders arched. He stands behind her limply.
It's always been you. Since first we met. Though so many years ago. I knew the first moment. Across a crowded room. On the lawn, in fact. Doesn't matter. Nothing either of us can do on this one. Such is life.
Her hands are resting on the back of a brocade sofa.
Friends isn't bad, you know. Friends is quite something.
Charles moves towards her and takes her hand. Her head is turned away from him.
It's not all easy, is it?
No. Just forget this business, not to be. Matthew. you, darling. Where's Gareth?
Torturing Americans.
How thoughtful of him.
Gareth is coming down the manorial staircase.
Do you actually know Oscar Wilde?
Not personally, no. But I do know someone who could get his fax number for you. Shall we dance?
Charles and Fiona are standing still in front of the cheerful dancing guests. Fiona coolly sips a drink, her eyes turned away from him. He looks uncomfortable, but is distracted by the sight of Gareth waving his arms, kicking his legs in an extravagant manner as he spins around with his American partner. Tom is dancing, Henrietta arm in arm with her new man. Gareth spins the matronly lady around by one hand, picks her up by the waist and circles her round. With her arms around him, she laughs delightedly. He kisses her hand and joins his friends.
Well, any rings on fingers?
Oh, Gareth, you don't know how lucky you are. Finding someone to marry is a very tricky business.
Hell out there. Matthew's trapped with an evangelist from Minnesota.
The evangelist, in a tartan blazer, pats Matthew's face with both hands.
My lords, ladies and gentlemen, please charge your glasses. First, and rather unusually, we have the bride.
Excellent. I love this girl.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to thank all of you who've flown in from the States. I'm really touched. And as for the rest of you, I would have thought the fact that lots of frightful Americans were flying in was a perfect excuse for staying away, so I thank you, too. If my darling dad had been here today, he would have been speaking now. And I know what he would have said. Great dress, babe, but why in the hell are you marrying the stiff in the skirt? And I would have given him the same answer that I give you. Because I love him. As John Lennon said, who died the same year as my dad, love is the answer. And you know that for sure.
Carrie reaches over to kiss her husband. Charles is watching her with undisguised love.
Oh, and, one more thing. Someone told me here, confidentially, that if things with Hamish didn't work out, that he would step in. And I just wanted to say thanks, and I'll keep you posted.
As Hamish kisses his bride, Charles stands completely still, looking on.
And now, my lord, ladies and gentlemen, Sir Hamish Banks. Involved in politics for the last 20 years has got used to being upstaged by a woman. I didn't expect it to happen to me.
Gareth, standing behind Charles, starts to sway. Charles, thinking he's drunk, grimaces. Gareth tumbles to the ground.
Oh dear, is that some barracking at the back? Again, something we politicians are used to.
Find a doctor.
Right, okay.
First of all, I want to extend my compliments to the bridesmaids. You did your duty superbly.
A doctor takes Gareth's face in his hands and examines his eyes. Matthew, across the room, is listening to Hamish, unaware of what's happened. Tom, Charles, David and the doctor carry Gareth's limp body into a dark sitting room and lie him on the floor. As the doctor feels his pulse, Charles and the rest look on helplessly, Fiona's pale face shining in the darkness. She turns away, hiding her tears. Scarlett dashes in as David gently lowers Gareth's head onto the carpeted floor.
By any chance, she's short-sighted. I might just be happy for the rest of my life. I thought I could see my...
Charles, his face ashen, moves slowly through the crowd of people.
Years to come.
He weaves his way through to Matthew. He hesitates for a moment and touches Matthew's arm. In the foreground, a terrace of two-up, two-down modern brick houses. In the misty distance, a metal road bridge. It's a grey, rainy day. Parked on the corner of a street, an open hearse with a coffin. On it, a white floral tribute. A young pallbearer closes the garden gate behind them as Matthew leads an elderly couple out to the waiting limousine. They all get in. The hearse and car move slowly down the narrow street, cars parked on both sides of the grass verge. Mourners follow on under their umbrellas. Charles and Scarlett hurry towards a small grey and white timber chapel. As he enters, Charles notices Carrie. Their eyes meet, and she looks away. He finds a seat in front of David and Serena, and next to Fiona, who hands Serena a tissue. Charles puts on his specs, and putting his arm around Fiona, gives her a comforting squeeze.
Good morning, and a warm welcome to you all on this cold day. Our service will begin in a few minutes, but first we have asked Matthew, Gareth's closest friend, to say a few words.
Matthew rises to his feet, watched by Gareth's slightly bewildered mother and father. He stands at the head of the coffin, facing the small congregation.
Gareth used to prefer funerals to weddings. He said it was easier to get enthusiastic about a ceremony one had an outside chance of eventually being involved in. In order to prepare this speech, I rang a few people to get a general picture of how Gareth was regarded by those who met him. Fat seems to have been a word people most connected with him. Terribly rude also rang a lot of bells. So very fat and very rude seems to have been the stranger's viewpoint. On the other hand, some of you have been kind enough to ring me and let me know that you loved him, which I know he would have been thrilled to hear. You remember his fabulous hospitality? This strange experimental cooking. The recipe for duck a la banana fortunately goes with him to his grave. Most of all, you tell me of his enormous capacity for joy, and when joyful for highly vocal drunkenness. But I hope joyful is how you will remember him. Not stuck in a box in a church. Pick your favourite of his waistcoats and remember him that way. The most splendid, replete, big-hearted, weak-hearted as it turned out, and jolly bugger most of us ever met. As for me, you may ask how I will remember him. What I thought of him. Unfortunately, there I run out of words. Perhaps you will forgive me if I turn from my own feelings to the words of another splendid bugger, W.H. Auden. This is actually what I want to say. Stop all the clocks. Cut off the telephone. Prevent the dog from barking with a juicy bone. Silence the pianos and with muffled drum bring out the coffin. Let the mourners come. Let the aeroplanes circle moaning overhead, scribbling on the sky the message, he is dead. Put crape bows round the white necks of the public doves. Let traffic policemen wear black cotton gloves. He was my north, my south, my east and west. My working week. My Sunday rest. My noon, my midnight, my talk, my song. I thought that love would last forever. I was wrong. The stars are not wanted now. Put out everyone. Pack up the moon and dismantle the sun. Pour away the ocean and sweep up the wood. For nothing now can ever come to any good.
The pale ash coffin has been carried out to the hearse. Matthew stands in the centre of the mourners, his gaunt cheeks casting shadows on his face. The chapel is dwarfed to one side by a red and grey refinery complex. As the hearse moves off, Matthew motions for the people to follow. David and Serena, hand in hand, greet Charles, who brushes away a tear. Fiona leaves Tom's side, runs to Scarlett, and wipes the younger girl's tear-stained cheeks with her thumb. Carrie walks up to Charles.
It's good of you to come. Must have been the shortest honeymoon in history.
No, it's fine. We'll do it some other time.
She averts her eyes from his gaze.
You know that thing you said in the street?
Yes, I'm sorry about that.
No, I liked it. I liked you saying it.
She raises her eyes with a faint smile and kisses him lightly on the lips. Gloomily, he watches her go.
Charlie, I'll take Scarlett home, right?
Yeah. Darling, Fee.
He kisses Fiona on the cheek. She bites back a tear, then leads Scarlett away by the hand.
Walk, Charlie. Yeah, that would be grand.
He falls in step with Tom.
Never felt like that. I mean, something vaguely similar. For Jilly, when I was young.
Jilly?
Labrador.
Yes, it's odd, isn't it? All these years we've been single and proud of it. We never noticed that two of us were, to all intents and purposes, married all this time.
Traitors in our midst.
They stop by a metal rail overlooking the refinery.
You know, in a way, I think death is hardest for the parents, don't you? I hope I die before my children.
Tom, one thing I find really, it's your total confidence that you will get married. I mean, what if you never find the right girl? Sorry? Surely if that service shows anything, it shows that there is such a thing as a perfect match. You know, if we can't be like Gareth and Matthew, then maybe we should just let it go. Some of us are not going to get married.
Well, I don't know, Charlie. The truth is, unlike you, I never expected the Thunderbolt. I always just hoped that I'd meet some nice, friendly girl. Like the look of her. Hope the look of me didn't make her physically sick. Then pop the question and settle down and be happy. It worked for my parents. Well, apart from the divorce and all that.
I'll give you 6 months at the outside, Tom. Huh. Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe all this waiting for one true love stuff gets you nowhere.
Charles switches off the clock by his bedside without opening his eyes.
What the fuck is going on?
All around him, alarm clocks of every colour and size. Tom is lying in bed with him.
Thought we'd better make absolutely sure we weren't late. Excellent wedding hairstyle, by the way.
An invitation to Charles's wedding, and it's 10 months later.
Matthew. Best-looking best man in the world. Listen. Thank you for doing this today.
Of course.
Charles wraps his arms around Matthew.
I wish Gareth was here.
Bet he does too.
I'm sorry we're so late. The others are just parking the car. I thought we'd all go with Tom.
Late? So late?
Yeah, it's 9:45.
9:45?
Yep, 45 minutes till I do.
Oh, bloody Tom, I told him to set the alarm at 8.
Charles drops the kettle and scampers out of the kitchen as Scarlett, in glasses, wanders in, stretching and yawning.
Scarlett.
Oh, hi.
You ready?
Absolutely. Give me 20 seconds.
The grey stone facade of St. Julian's Church peeps through the leafy branches of a tree as Tom's Land Rover swerves into view. Charles lurches out.
Time, honestly.
Yes, time!
It's about 8:50.
Oh.
Fiona, Matthew, David, Serena and Scarlett stifle their grins as Charles hurtles off towards the church past two men delivering flowers. He stops still and turns to face his friends. His eyebrows knotted, he strides back to the car and looks in at them.
Bastards.
Jessica, stop. Up and down, can you see?
A bride's garland of white flowers is carefully taken out of its box.
One, two, three.
At the church, the friends munching breakfast pose for Scarlett.
This is
famous, Tuck. Yes, I think I might say a little word.
Yeah.
Well, as many of you know, I have been a close observer of Charles's love life for many years now, but recently I'd started to despair and fear that really he was married to us lot, apart from the fact that we won't have his babies.
Well, I don't know about that.
Unfortunately, it's all turned out splendidly. The girl in question is sadly crazy, but perhaps that's why he loves her. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to propose a toast to my Charlie and his beautiful girl on this tragic day. So be happy and don't forget us.
Thank you.
To Charles and Duckface.
Charles and Duckface.
The crown of white flowers is placed carefully on Henrietta's head. She considers the effect in a mirror.
What do you think?
You look divine.
It does work, doesn't it? Yes.
Back outside the church.
Well, I'd like to thank Fiona for those charming words about my future wife. And I'd like to take this opportunity before the day starts to read a little message from her to you all.
Oh, this is exciting.
Right, she says, any of you come near the house, I'll set the dogs on you. So that's, I think that's right. That's a nice touch.
Sweet, sweet. I set the dogs on you.
At the entrance of the church.
John, hi. John, you made it good.
Yes. I hope my damn sister turns. I'm not much of a wedding without a bride.
Young Tom.
Hello, John.
A bit of a poor show, you not having a stag night.
Oh, we did. We didn't think it was a very good idea in this day and age.
Really?
John misses the point, but grins anyway as Matthew and Charles head on through the door. Charles stands at the back, gazing towards the altar of the still-empty medieval church. Fiona, in orange and blue, smiling impishly, hands him an order of service.
See, you do look lovely today.
Yes, as you can see, I've abandoned my traditional black.
Yes, there you have.
From now on, I shall be all the colours of the rainbow and fall in love with someone who fancies me for a change.
She eyes him pointedly, then grins.
Darling Fee.
He embraces her warmly. She breaks away with a wry smile. Oh. She wipes lipstick off his cheek. At almost a quarter to 11, the guests are beginning to arrive, some in an open-topped car. An elegant woman in a pink suit and broad-brimmed yellow hat steps out of a car. Another in a cream suit with a matching cream hat. One girl with long blonde hair and a blue straw hat is putting on lipstick. Inside the church, Charles is pacing uneasily. As the vicar walks away with a springy step, Charles fretfully puts on his specs. Hats galore bounce towards the church door like a sunny day at Ascot. Charles is sitting hunched in a pew as guests take their seats. Scarlett sprints towards Angus and Laura carrying their twin baby daughters and into the arms of Chester.
I thought you'd gone back to Texas.
Without you, never.
As two ladies hurry by him in pale blue and pink suits, Charles rises to his feet and absent-mindedly shakes someone's hand.
Bride or groom?
Charles' neighbour at the first wedding stares aghast.
Bride or groom?
It should be perfectly obvious I'm neither. Great God.
Tom.
Bride or groom?
Bride.
The girl in a pink hat turns towards him. Tom is struck dumb. They gaze at each other in wonder. His lips quiver.
Yes, I'm fine. You know, I've got a feeling we've met before.
We have. About 25 years ago. I'm second cousin Harold's daughter, Deirdre, your Tom.
Good Lord. So, your family?
Yes. Only very distant.
Well, yes. Of course. You said you were a bride?
Yes.
Well, do sit. Do sit here, Deirdre.
As she sits, his hands are still clasped to hers.
Golly. Thunderbolt City.
In the vestry.
Hello, Matthew.
Hello, Charles.
How are you?
Exhausted, actually.
Charles.
Lydia gives Charles the thumbs up. He smiles faintly, then turns to see Carrie, dressed soberly in grey.
Hi.
Hi.
You look lovely.
But then, as you know, I always did like you dress for weddings. And on time.
Yeah, extraordinary thing, isn't it? How's Hamish?
Oh, he's fine, I believe.
You believe?
Oh, yes, he wasn't the man for me after all.
He stares in surprise.
You left him?
We left each other.
He pulls her to one side.
When?
Oh, a few months now. March was hell. By April it was sorted. It's absolutely the last time I marry someone three times my age.
Charlie? Charles, time to travel?
Yeah, yeah. Coming. Good. Good. So why didn't you get in touch then?
I did think about it. I wanted to, but, I was in a state. So anyway, I don't want to keep you. And I'll see you afterwards.
Yeah. Fine, excellent. Wait.
She scurries back.
I'll show you to your seat.
They walk together down the aisle.
Just showing her to her seat.
With a determined gait, he escorts her to one of the pews. Hesitates, then takes her to one side.
Our time has been really bad, hasn't it?
It's been bad, yes.
It's been a disaster.
It has, as you say, been very bad indeed. God, it's lovely to see you.
Well, good luck. It's pretty easy. Just say I do whenever anyone asks you a question.
She slips away, leaving him stunned. To Matthew.
Would you just give me a sec, Matthew? Yes, of course. Freshen up it will.
Charles slips down one of the naves behind Carrie's pew. She sits with her hand over her mouth. He wanders into the vestry and takes a few paces as if in a daze.
Dear Lord, forgive me for what I'm about to say in this magnificent place of worship. Fuck. Bugger. 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 Can I help at all? Huh? No, thanks. Sorry. Vocal exercises. Big church.
Excellent. Often do the same myself. Not exactly the same vocab, obviously. Rather more alleluias. I'll leave you.
The smiling verger pats Charles's arm as the beribboned bridal car arrives outside the church. Henrietta, veiled and in pure white, emerges from the car carrying a cascading bouquet of white lilies and freesias. Her father takes her hand. Matthew strides down the centre of the church towards Tom.
Blades arriving.
Oh, fabulous.
We seem to have lost the groom.
Do you want to see if you can stall that and I'll see if I can find him?
Roger, we'll go.
Matthew finds Charles bent over the back of a chair, leaning on both arms.
Charles.
Mm.
It's good to see you.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Matt, what do we think about marriage?
Gosh. Well, I think it's really good.
Mm.
If you love the person with all your heart.
Well, exactly. All these weddings, you know, all these, years. All that, lasted salmon and champagne. Here I am on my own wedding day, and I'm still thinking.
What can I ask about what?
No. No, I think best not.
I'm terribly sorry. There's a bit of a delay. There's just a slight problem with the flowers.
Flowers, what?
Unfortunately, there seems to be a staggeringly high proportion of hay fever sufferers in the congregation, and they've been stuck right next to the damn flowers. So we're just moving them. The congregation. Don't want the damn vows to be obliterated by the sound of sneezing.
Charles, would it be out of place for me to say that time is ticking by?
Charles, face forward on a table, looks up at his brother. What's happening? Tell me, David signs. Charles takes a deep breath and signs, Oh, God, I just saw Carrie, and she's separated. David, a little impatiently, Charles, it's your wedding day. In the church, Fiona looks round with concern. Bernard and Lydia whisper. Tom rushes up to Scarlett.
I think I fooled them so far. The great advantage of having a reputation for being stupid. People are less suspicious of you.
What's your advice? Charles asks David. You've got three choices. One, go ahead with it. Charles nods gravely. Two, go outside and say, sorry, folks, it's all off. Charles closes his eyes. Not tempting. Next. Third, I can't think of a third. Charles turns away in desperation.
Hello.
Here you are. Ready to face the enemy?
Are we?
Matthew and David both look at Charles, who pulls himself up to his full height.
Yes.
And gives a brave smile.
Excellent.
He adjusts his tie and takes a deep breath like a man going to the scaffold. Matthew and David follow him out of the vestry. As he comes down the aisle, Charles glances over at Carrie's equally unhappy face. Matthew and Charles take their places in the front pew. Tom dashes in through the choir, giving the thumbs up. Charles and Matthew's heads turn towards the door and the entrance of the bride and her father. Charles steps limply into the aisle. He turns to see Henrietta striding towards him with a look of triumphant glee on her face. Charles turns back to the altar, his glum face as if set in stone. Henrietta, on her smiling father's arm, hisses under her breath.
So tight, Dad.
Charles, the corners of his eyes and mouth turned down, stands completely still as if awaiting execution. Henrietta, meanwhile, beams from side to side, finally arriving at her bridegroom's side. He turns towards her, takes a few paces forward and smiles thinly at the vicar. A bridesmaid in corn blue takes the bouquet.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered together here in the sight of God and in the face of this congregation to join together this man and this woman in holy matrimony, which is an honorable estate instituted of God in the time of man's innocence, signifying unto us the mystical union that is betwixt Christ and his church, and therefore is not by any to be enterprised, nor taken in hand unadvisedly, lightly, or wantonly, but reverently, discreetly, advisedly, soberly, and in the fear of God. Therefore, if any man can show any just cause why they may not lawfully be joined together, let him speak now, or else hereafter, forever, hold his peace.
Charles's blue eyes are fixed on the vicar.
I'm sorry, does someone have something to say?
All eyes turn towards the sound. David hesitantly raises his hand.
Yes, what is it?
One second.
Charles signs to David. What's going on? With everyone craning to see, David says, I've thought of a third option. What? Will you translate, asks David.
What's going on, Charles?
Just what?
It wants me to translate what he's saying.
What is he saying?
David signs.
He says, I suspect the groom is having doubts. I suspect the groom would like to delay.
I think the groom really loves someone else.
I suspect the groom.
That's true, isn't it, Charles? Because, Charlie, this is for the rest of your life. Finally, you've got to marry the person you love with your whole heart. And by the way, your flies are undone.
What's he saying?
Slowly, Charles turns to face the vicar.
He says, he suspects the groom loves someone else.
Fiona's eyes roll upwards.
Do you love someone else? Do you, Charles?
Henrietta looks at him pleadingly. The congregation waits with bated breath and wide eyes.
I do.
David covers his face with his hand. Charles lands on his back on a dark blue marble headstone. His friends gather round as high above the altar. The windows are shaken by a clap of thunder. Back at Charles's flat.
Blimey.
At least it's one we won't forget. I mean, a lot of weddings just blend into each other, don't they?
Oh, for God's sake.
But this is one that will really stick out in the memory.
For not actually including a wedding service.
Poor girl. Well, I mean it, poor girl. I mean, she's not my favourite person in the world, but I think that may have been an unforgivable thing that you did today.
I can't bear to think about it. Poor Hen.
Though, let's face facts. I mean, if you weren't sure you wanted to marry her today, of all days, i.e. your wedding day, then it must be the right decision, mustn't it?
Quite right, Tom.
It was a lovely dress. I'm sure she'll find it useful for parties.
David, apologetically.
What did he say, Charles?
Says he blames himself.
Oh, absolutely.
No, you mustn't, David.
Charles, peevishly to David, they all blame you too.
No. If there's music to be faced, I should be facing it.
His face red and puffy, Charles, now just in his shirt and trousers, moves towards the door.
Hello.
Carrie is drenched.
Hi, you're soaking.
No, I'm fine. Comes a point when you're so wet you can't get any wetter.
Okay, I'll come out.
No, please don't. I just want to check you're okay. Not busy killing yourself or anything, but you're fine, so I shouldn't have come to the church this morning. I'm sorry.
No. Wait. It was all my fault. I mean, I'm the bastard here. And it definitely sorted out one thing, which is marriage and me were very clearly not meant for one another. Sorted out another big thing as well. There I was standing there in the church, and for the first time in my whole life, I realized I totally and utterly loved one person. And it wasn't the person standing next to me in the veil. It's the person standing opposite me now. In the rain.
Is it still raining? I hadn't noticed.
The truth of it is, I've loved you from the first second I met you. You're not suddenly going to go away again, are you?
No. I might drown, but otherwise, no.
Okay. We'll go in.
They're both sopping wet and grinning foolishly.
First, let me ask you one thing. Do you think, after we've dried off, after we've spent lots more time together, you might agree not to marry me? And do you think not being married to me might maybe be something you could consider doing for the rest of your life? Do you?
I do.
With his soaking hands, he holds her rain-drenched face and kisses her on the lips. Above them, and above the roofs of the houses in his street, a thunderbolt cracks the sky. A series of photos of another wedding. Henrietta and a guards officer in a red tunic standing beneath an arc of raised swords held by guardsmen in their bearskins. The couple posing for the camera. David and Serena kissing outside a flower-strewn church, their faces wreathed in happy smiles. Scarlett clutching the arm of her 6-foot Texan. She's wearing his Stetson. And being carried off by him. And being kissed by him. With his faithful black Labrador by his side, Tom poses outside his stately home with his bride dressed like Little Bo Peep. They're dwarfed by the 6 tall columns adorning the front of his house. Bride, groom and dog pose for the camera. A photo of Matthew in party mood holding a glass of champagne. With him, a man of his own age with a broad smile. Pouring more champagne into Matthew's glass. The two of them canoodling. Fiona, in a pink suit and matching broad-brimmed hat, stands grinning next to Prince Charles. Charles, Carrie and a baby in blue pose for the camera. The end.